This week on the Vital Masculinity Podcast, we continue our discussion on friendship with a look at how Cicero understands friendship. You might be wondering to yourself, isn't this the third time we've talked about what friendship is? Well, it is. And to be honest, I wasn't sure if we were going to be able to add much to what we have already said on friendship. But I was surprised at how Cicero's understanding contributed a lot of new insights. He particularly focuses in on how to appreciate your friends, and how to choose good friends. I know this is something that I could learn to do better, and I'm sure if you're honest with yourself, you could probably use some pointers too. So let's get talking about what Cicero has to say in regards to friendship.
What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? You are listening once again to the Vital Masculinity Podcast. My name is Stephen Sloyer, and I am joined, as always, by my dear friend, Mr. Brian Murphy. Brian, how you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing pretty well. I've been working out a lot more. We got a set of weights in our basement, so I have to say I've been feeling a lot better since I've gotten back into lifting and running more often.
I do have to point out that I will be reporting you to COVID Cuomo after the, or should I say Comrade Cuomo, after this episode. I don't know what one I like better, because even though it's in your home, you know, we can't do Thanksgiving or things like that either in our homes because of reasons. Anyway, we've already done an episode on the coronavirus, and that was, 6 months ago now. So I think we'll leave the COVID posting to a minimum. But tonight we're going to continue our discussion, which is basically a continuation of the past couple of episodes, on the topic of friendship. And the last episode we really touched on the themes of C.S. Lewis. The episode before was really heavily based on Aristotle. And we're going to kind of go back to another ancient thinker this time and talk about Cicero's take on acquiring and choosing good friends. So, Brian, why is Cicero important? I mean, Aristotle's a big name. C.S. Lewis is obviously a big name, even though he's much more recent. Cicero, some people may recognize him, but some people may not, or they may not have read him. Why do you think it's important to touch on what he's talking about on the subject?
Well, when we're talking about Cicero or C.S. Lewis and Aristotle, I believe C.S. Lewis refers to Cicero, if not explicitly, at least implicitly, talking about the ancients when they're talking about the different loves and as well as friendship, which we're talking about in this episode. And Aristotle was a Greek and Cicero was a Roman, but he got a lot of his influences from Aristotle, among other people as well. So, and he has an interesting take on friendship. I think it harmonizes with what we talked about before, but it kind of is a more, I guess you might say, practical take on friendship, because as we're going to discuss in his writings, they kind of, the Greeks and the Romans have their different understandings of what virtue is. And Romans tend to be known as doers, whereas Greeks are more of thinkers. And that might be a broad generalization, but I think that that's how people tend to think of these two different groups of ancient peoples. And so I think we'll see in Cicero's writings, when we talk about him in this episode, that he has a lot of practical applications for his understanding of friendship.
So the major work we're going to be referencing is Cicero's De Amicitia, or On Friendship. And it's basically a dialogue between Gaius Laelius Sapiens the Younger and his two son-in-laws. And they're reflecting on the death of Scipio Africanus, who was a really great Roman general. Honestly, probably one of the greatest generals throughout the entirety of world history. Defeated Hannibal in North Africa. Really, really saved the Roman, at that time, Republic. But I think that actually his writings get to your point, Brian, and reinforce the difference between the Greeks and the Romans, because one of the son-in-laws, Fannius, contrasts Greek virtue and Roman virtue, and really uses the example of how Socrates is really praised for his words, which makes sense. He was a sophist. He basically wandered around and debated people, or got people to try to explain their rationales for believing things or doing things. And he contrasts it with the Roman, I'll say, equivalent of Cato. And Cato, even though he was a writer, and many people may know him and may kind of lump him together with Cicero, Cato was much more of a doer. And this really gets to, you know, kind of Fannius's point that talk is cheap. And I think this is something that is very important, that there are going to be a lot of differences between C.S. Lewis and Aristotle and Cicero and really some of the other people that may be referenced or people that have written about these people. But even though they may come at it with different backgrounds, there's still going to be a lot of threads. So try to pay attention to both the differences and similarities as we go on through the rest of these episodes.
One of the interesting things about this writing of Cicero is that it's written in the form of a dialogue. As you mentioned, we have Laelius who's talking to his two sons-in-law. And it's a really interesting take because he's explaining friendship through a discussion, which is not really something you see in modern works of like self-help or whatever it might be. They tend to just be thematic and subject-oriented, and there's not really it's not very personal. The reason that he chooses to teach about friendship in this way is because friendship is a personal thing. And Laelius, the main speaker here, he's referring to his friend Scipio, his good friend, who has he's died, he's suffered misfortune, but he also recognizes that he has lived a noble life. Something interesting about this is that Laelius says that he hasn't suffered a loss. Or if anyone has suffered a loss, it's him, not Scipio. You know, even though Scipio has died, he lived a good life. He was a noble man. And that's really what we're trying to talk about on the Vital Masculinity podcast is, as we always say, virtue makes the man. And regardless of, you know, if you die young or if you died of old age, if you live a virtuous life, you have lived a good life. You know, we all hope to live a long life, but doing the right thing is what matters most, not necessarily how long your life is.
And this is honestly probably a common theme, the loss of a friend, the loss of a loved one that we've all dealt with or we all at some point in our lives will deal with. And I think it's important to point out that, you know, even with these losses, even with this grief, this, you know, separation, a virtuous man does show more concern for his friend than for his own feeling of loss. And I think that's an interesting statement. We've mentioned and touched briefly on kind of our weird culture on death before. There's also an article on our website, which we'll link to in the show notes below, that kind of mentions how we have like a death industry, and the way that we view death is very foreign to the way that, I'll say, the ancients, but really a lot of the non-modern Western cultures viewed death. And, excuse me, and with this change in how we view death, we've also gotten this change where how we process grief. And for a lot of people, it's people will nowadays just kind of get lost in their feelings. And it's not bad to feel things. You know, I don't want to say that you shouldn't feel sad, you know, if your dad dies or your friend dies or whatever it may be. But I think so many people get caught up in their feelings and they may even try to prolong them, which is a very bad thing to do because it's dangerous to your mental health. It's dangerous to the people around you. And it's just because they're trying to feel something deeply. I don't know, Brian, if you've had to deal with loss. I mean, it was at a young age for me. It was when I was finishing up middle school. My grandfather died. And it was, you know, for me, I just didn't know how to process it. We weren't, you know, really taught how to process it, whether by our parents and certainly not in school. And I think what's interesting is that I was certainly much more focused on how I was feeling than anything else, whether my grandfather or whether it, you know, be like other family members that were trying to process it, you know, themselves.
I can't say I've had any friends die, although I have had a lot of friendships like blow up, usually unexpectedly. And that mm-hmm. is certainly frustrating and disappointing and sad. And I think you make a good point that, you know, emotions aren't a bad thing. Like, you know, it's normal to feel sad at a loss of a friend, you know, whether they've died or they move away or, you know, for something bad happens in the relationship and it doesn't continue. You know, that's a sad thing. It's upsetting. And that's a normal reaction to have. I think the point here is that, you know, as we always say, virtue makes the man. And so we need to do the virtuous thing, you know, regardless of how we feel. And in Laelius's case, he chooses to honor his friend rather than focusing on consoling himself. He wants to recognize the good things in his friendship and appreciate his friend for the good man who he was. And I think, you know, in a way, if in doing that, he's probably able to get over his grief more easily, because it's not all about him. It's about recognizing, you know, the good friendship and the good man who was his friend. And, you know, there's nothing that's going to change that. You know, even though he's died, he still has these memories. He still has the experience. And, you know, that's always going to be there.
And before we really get into the meat of the episode, I think it's kind of important to bring up two other distinctions between the Greek and Roman views of friendship that are pointed out in this entire dialogue. And the first is the dichotomy of the Greeks' preference of wisdom, where the Romans would prefer other, I'll say, virtues like loyalty, integrity, justice, generosity, and freedom from certain vices and things like that. And I think that's important to point out because it really just gets back to the words versus deeds dichotomy that we brought up before. And the other point is that, and this I think makes sense when you really think about it, the Greeks in many ways kind of tied friendship into, you know, like, I'll say like the concept of a citizen, or basically they were viewing it in the context of like countrymen or within their families. And the Romans were able to expand this a little bit and kind of have friendship be something that stood much more on its own, containing things that, you know, the bonds of being countrymen, the bonds of family would lack otherwise. And I think this ties very well into both Aristotle and what C.S. Lewis have talked about this. And I think this makes sense because when you look at the ancient Greeks were really focused and really segregated into their city-states, which were relatively small, while the Romans had, you know, at its peak, the, you know, just swaths of land covering their entire empire. And having this vast expanse that they needed to cover, and they were doing like building relationships in between and all these sorts of things that were necessary to keep the empire together. These things needed, or friendship needed to take a different form, because it wasn't just these like tight-knit neighborly countrymen aspects where everyone you knew lived within a 20-mile radius or whatever it may be.
And that's a great point, because I think that's something that we can relate to today, especially with the internet and being connected with people all over the world. I mean, you know, Stephen and I are recording in two different states right now. So it's certainly something that is goes beyond just locality and, blood. Relationships, although those things are certainly important, and I think that part of having a friendship is appreciating those things. So, moving on to, I guess, Cicero's definition of friendship, or I guess you could say Laelius defining friendship, although obviously Cicero is speaking through him. This is what he has to say about it. Friendship is nothing else than an accord in all things, human and divine, conjoined with mutual goodwill and affection. And I am inclined to think that, with the exception of wisdom, no better thing has been given to man by the immortal gods. So why don't we unpack that a little bit. So friendship is nothing else than an accord in all things. So that's basically, you know, we agree on things. We're in harmony. We get along together. in all things, which is, if you think about back to the episodes where we talked about the different levels of friendship that Aristotle references, you know, someone who has a friendship of utility or a friendship of pleasure, that's not really in accord of all things. That's just, a specific area. But in this type of friendship, and this is really the type of friendship that Cicero is talking about, is Aristotle's third level of friendship, or C.S. Lewis's understanding of friendship, this virtuous friendship. It's something where you desire the good for the other person in everything. And he mentions human and divine. So, as a Christian, you would want good things for this person, but you would also care about, the state of their soul and that they're right with God. And I don't know. Do you have any other thoughts on his definition here, Stephen?
Honestly, it reminds me a lot, or there's elements, I should say, of what C.S. Lewis and Aristotle talk about. And that makes sense. I don't think you really find too many varying degrees of friendship where what Cicero is mentioning is really anything that's so foreign. What I think is interesting, though, is that, he does bring up the whole idea of mutual goodwill and affection, and that really that is explicitly mentioned by C.S. Lewis, how it is kind of necessary to have this level of affection and mutual goodwill. So my personal belief is that C.S. Lewis was probably reading Cicero, but to be honest, I would reckon that anyone that was going through, I guess C.S. Lewis probably would have been in school in like the 1910s, 1900s or so, probably would have been reading Cicero in the original Latin anyway. But I think something that's also important when we're looking at Cicero's kind of take on these things is the language Cicero uses. And this kind of makes sense. He was a patrician, and I believe it was patrician, but he was a Roman, and he lived during the beginning of the decline of the Republic, but it was still very much a high time for his country, his countrymen, and himself. And there's this notion of appreciation of friendship that really comes out throughout this entire dialogue. And it's kind of like the notion that, friendship makes things much more enjoyable. It also helps reduce your burdens of life or of, even non-shared activities. And that's something that is really important to keep in mind because, let's be honest, guys. There's a struggle, especially among men, to be grateful for things and to show appreciation. And whether it's, as we mentioned in the last episode, the hermeneutic of gay suspicion, or it's just like we don't know how to appreciate other people like our friends, it's something that's very important. So another thing to pay attention to is certainly the language that Cicero uses and that a lot of these topics are couched in, because it's very applicable even, 2,200 years later, or however long it's been.
Yeah, so one point he makes is that friendship, or amicitia, in my ecclesiastical pronunciation, derives from amor, which is love. So friendship, this word that they use, that the Latins use for friendship, that the Romans use for friendship, derives from love. And, that makes sense because, especially since we're talking about, C.S. Lewis's Four Loves. We're going through the series, kind of following that format of the Four Loves, and we consider friendship to be one of those types of love. And so I think that that's something that as men, as you were talking about a minute ago, maybe you feel a little squeamish about saying that you love your male friends because, the way that we understand love today. But I think that, ultimately, if you have a healthy and virtuous understanding of what love looks like, then you will be able to appreciate friendship as being a type of love. And another point that he makes related to this is that there is nothing more lovable than virtue, which I think is an amazing something that you should really meditate on, because we're talking about a friendship, a virtuous friendship, and people look up to others who are virtuous. They admire people who are virtuous. They honor and respect and want to be like that. And so when you have a virtuous friendship when both parties, you know, both men in the friendship are virtuous, you're going to have a certain respect for that other person, a certain love towards that other person because of the virtue that they embody. And I think that that's something that, you know, perhaps you could spend some time meditating on, because it's worth recognizing that, you know, it's that thing, it's that quality that we're appreciating. Obviously, there's other qualities as well, but, you know, you might think of friends perhaps that weren't such good friends in the past. You know, maybe they did something bad to you, or whatever it was, they probably weren't very virtuous, and that's something that destroyed the friendship. But, you know, virtue brings the friendship together, and it's something that I would say even enlivens the friendship, gives it vitality.
And on the flip side, Cicero makes it explicit that true friendship is not a crutch, meaning that you're really not going to form actual friendships out of, you know, needs, kind of, whether it's something like poverty or inadequacy, or, you know, basically, I would say the notion that Aristotle has of friendship of utility. Those are not strong friendships, and it's mainly because that hardship is going to knock these friendships apart basically the second it comes together, because the only thing bringing them together, bringing two people together or two or more people together, is the common or even one-sided need of people in the group. And that's not a stable thing. Needs change, wants change, feelings change, situations change. And this is another reason why Cicero really does harp on the importance of virtue, the ties between virtue and friendship, and the whole notion that virtue is in many ways the preeminent love that we should have.
And on a similar note, he goes on to talk about this virtue within your relationship. And he says that friends neither ask dishonorable things of a friend, nor do such things if asked. And then he follows that up with the first law of friendship. So if you're taking notes, make sure you circle this, underline it, write it in big bold letters. This is the first law of friendship. Ask of friends only what is honorable. Do for friends only what is honorable. And don't even wait to be asked.
That's interesting. You know, I almost want to play devil's advocate and say that, would that mean that maybe members of the mafia didn't have friends inside things? You know, the mafia did a lot of dishonorable things. Would that mean that if, you know, you were asked to do something that was not honorable, that the person wasn't really your friend? Or how does that work, do you think?
Yeah, I would say so. I think that... I don't know. I could just, I've never been in the mafia, so I don't know what that's like. But I think about if I was in that situation, I would probably be always looking over my shoulder, wondering if someone's going to stab me in the back. And if that's the case, you don't really have a good friend, because if you're worrying about your friend stabbing you in the back, or, you know, asking you to stab someone else in the back, like, what kind of friend would that be?
And I would also say that based on all of what we've talked about with the notion of friendship, and Cicero, you know, echoes this, of wishing the other person's well, having that goodwill towards them. If there's someone in the mafia and you're telling them to do something dishonorable, you do not have their best interests in mind. So that was an interesting little thing. And I agree with this whole kind of first law of friendship. And honor is something that I would love to talk about at some point down the line. You told me before we did this episode, we probably have 2 to 3 months of content left on this friendship episode, or friendship series, I should say. So it may be sometime next spring or next summer or whenever. But I think we have something in the works at some point for a discussion on manly honor.
Yeah, I think so. When I said that, I meant 2 or 3 months at least with the four loves and the theological virtues. Although we could have 2 or 3 months. I mean, I'm sure we could come up with a lot of stuff for friendship, because this is a deep topic. And we could probably just have episodes on each of these individual qualities if we wanted to.
For sure.
Okay, so next up, Cicero discusses what you could call three erroneous principles of friendship. And I'll just go over those real quick and we can talk about what exactly he means by that. But these are three principles that someone might have or consider that we should apply to our friendships that he considers to be erroneous. Number one, we should feel toward our friends the same way we feel toward ourselves. Number two, our goodwill and good deeds toward our friends should precisely match their goodwill and good deeds toward us. And number three, a man should value his friend just as he values himself. So why don't we start with the first one? What are your thoughts of number one? And I'll go over that one more time. We should feel toward our friends the same way we feel toward ourselves.
And that's the erroneous principle. That's an erroneous belief. Yeah, that's a very interesting thing. I think it actually makes sense. Honestly, what comes to mind when we have that statement is almost the biblical notion of the, you know, the two greatest commandments, love God and love your neighbor. Christ never says to love yourself. And it's a weird thing. I think that's kind of come out nowadays. And I know Cicero and Christ and pretty much anyone from antiquity or the medieval ages, and even like the Renaissance and later, would have this notion, like they would just scoff at this notion of loving yourself. It's a very new agey feeling. And honestly, I think it has to do with a very incorrect, to say the least, and to be politically correct, an incorrect notion of what yourself is. But I think this is good to bring up, and I think it's good to point out, because we should do hard things or we should sacrifice for the sake of others in ways that, you know, we may not do it for ourselves. We should always make sure that we're putting others ahead of ourselves. And like something else that's, I think, a great example. So like in the Orthodox Church, we're in the Nativity fast now, and something that's used as an example, and it always has been when we're talking about fasting, is let's say you get invited to go out to a friend's house. Well, that friend may not be Orthodox, or they may not be keeping the fast or whatever it may be, and you are, and they come out and they had spent 4 hours in the kitchen making this entire, you know, roast beef or whatever. You're not just going to be like, I'm not eating this, I can't eat this, you know, jumping on the table, being holier than thou. And there's a lot of reasons why that's wrong. But it's another thing where, you know, you have to sometimes forego good things for yourself, because fasting is a good thing, for the sake of your friend. You know, you can talk with them afterwards about, you know, your fast, or, you know, if it's a diet, for example, in a secular context, whatever it may be. But it's important to make sure, you know, unless it's something life-threatening, like an allergy, going back to that example, that you're recognizing, you're appreciating them, getting back to that kind of running theme in this episode.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I know that there's a lot of things that are difficult that I wouldn't do for myself, but I might do for someone else. I just think about, to use a current example, maybe this will make some people upset, but looking at what was going on in Washington, D.C. this past weekend with, you know, they had the Trump supporters protesting the election, and then you had, you know, the Antifa people attacking, and what comes to mind is this one couple, younger couple, they were walking down the street and people were throwing water on them. And I'm guessing it was like his girlfriend or something. And they were like flipping her off and like trying to steal her. And, you know, this guy's like covering her and protecting her. And, you know, he's taking a little bit more of the abuse than she is to protect her. Would I take that abuse if my girlfriend was there? Sure. But if it was just me, I don't know. I might do something else. So I think that's an interesting point that he makes, that they're having someone else to serve and to love changes the dynamic. And it certainly makes you realize that I think in a way it makes you kind of live to a higher standard, because it's a standard that perhaps you wouldn't hold yourself. Well, it's something you would hold yourself to, but it would be something that you know, if someone else wasn't there, you wouldn't be able to act on their behalf to, you know, to serve them, to show your love in that way.
So the second Irenaeus principle is the whole notion that what we do, so kind of our goodwill and our deeds toward our friends, should precisely or even like just imprecisely match what their goodwill, their good deeds towards us are. And this is incorrect, and I think pretty much anyone with half a brain can understand why, because this is, you know, saying that we should keep score. And Cicero explicitly says we shouldn't, that it's an erroneous idea of friendship. And this is something that's important to, I think, keep in mind, because honestly, when this topic, when this concept is brought up, it's typically brought up in the context of like a romantic or a marital relationship. But this does extend to a friendship. And a lot of times men nowadays don't really put 2, you know, ounces of thought into their friendships. And it can be very easy to even, you know, without any kind of intention to fall into this kind of notion of keeping score. You always need to make sure, though, that you are not measuring what, you know, you are doing for your friend and what they're doing for you. It's not about getting a return. You're not playing the stock market. You're not playing a game. If you really care for them as they are, if you really are to have actual goodwill and have a virtuous friendship, which is what everyone we've talked about has talked about, then you're making sure that you are just focused on doing good deeds for them, no matter what the cost, no matter what they do, you know, for in perpetuity, basically.
This third point, I feel like it kind of relates to pretty closely to the first one. And he says, a man should value his friend just as he values himself. And what does that mean? So and why is that erroneous? One way you could look at it is perhaps you're feeling down. Maybe you have poor self-esteem. Well, if you have poor self-esteem, or maybe you're just really humble, not in a false way, but in a true way, and you don't, you don't try to build yourself up in a arrogant way. That's not the way that you should look towards your friends. You know, you should have a high esteem for your friend. And I think that we can all relate to this. You know, some of the best friends we have are friends that encourage us. They give us hope. You know, they make us stronger. And, you know, even when we're down on ourselves, they kind of help to build us up. And, you know, they don't just join in and beat us up as we're beating ourselves up. I guess you could say perhaps there's a situation when, you know, maybe you do something wrong and maybe you should feel guilty about it. But on the same hand, if your friend's beating themselves up, even if they did something wrong, you're probably going to want to try to give it a different spin and help them to see how they can improve and move forward rather than just focusing on themselves. So I think that's why it's important, you know, in the first point and in the second point or in the third point, you know, it's not about how we feel about ourselves. It's not about how we value ourselves. It's about, we should value the friend for who they are and, for the value they have in themselves.
So let's talk about some of Cicero's limits and guides to friendship. The first one is this notion that we should choose friends of blameless character. And this is an interesting concept because I think it can kind of, it could lead to the road of perfectionism. And we've talked about that. We did an episode on that. Brian, you have admitted you're a recovering perfectionist. I think it probably can resonate with a lot of people that may be listening to our show. But I don't think he means necessarily that you need to choose your friends like you are conducting an interview for, I don't know, President of the United States or CEO of the number one company in the world. Basically, and again, this is a dialogue, so they talk about how Scipio Africanus would often speak about how painstaking the choice of your friends should be, and yet how carelessly friendships are usually formed. And this is something we've touched on you know, in our earlier episodes on friendship, on how typically friendships are formed basically either by proximity or just kind of by like mutual, you know, just acquaintanceship over something. And that's not necessarily the friendship that C.S. Lewis would talk about. It's certainly not the friendship that Cicero would talk about. But realistically, I think one of the best reasons for trying to choose friends of blameless character isn't that we're trying to get the people that are the most virtuous in the world. It's basically kind of that we're trying to avoid picking friends that are going to lead us down bad paths. You've probably all heard, whether it's from your parents or whether it's, you know, from parents in a TV show, like, I don't like you hanging out with Jimmy, he's a bad influence on you, or whatever it may be. And that's a very real thing. People have talked about, you know, we are basically the sum of the five people closest to us. I don't think that's necessarily a theorem. It's probably just a heuristic. And I think that's a very accurate way to view the effects of the people we associate with. Because if you associate with bad people, if you associate with people that are truly blameworthy, it is going to rub off on you. You should never, ever, ever, ever assume that you have the strength to be able to just, what's the word I'm looking for? To withstand, I guess, to withstand the negativity, to withstand the evil that could come out of somebody. So always make sure that you're at least picking friends that will not lead you down a bad path, whether knowingly or unknowingly.
I think you hit it on the head. It's not that we're looking for someone that's perfect. I think the key is that we're looking for someone who's striving to be virtuous, someone who is humble, someone who asks for forgiveness, you know, not someone who's stuck in vice and doesn't care and, you know, is going to pull you down. But you know, they don't, perhaps they do have some problems, but, you know, it's someone that recognizes their problems and is trying to work on them and to become a better man. And I think that's really what blameless means. It means someone who is humble, someone who is righteous in the sense that they recognize that they are a sinner, that they have issues and weaknesses and faults, and that they need help with those things and they're working on them. And I think one of the keys here that Cicero kind of talks about is that he says, "A wise man will be careful in the direction of his goodwill, and the speed with which he befriends others, as he would, when driving a chariot with a new team of horses, test the character of the horses now and then." And I think the point here is that you're not just going to become best friends with someone, good friends with someone after you first meet them, after a few times you chat with them. You know, you have to get to know this person, get to know if they're trustworthy, get to know if they're a good person. And then after you've kind of felt things out and gotten to know the person, then you can, if you think that they're a good person, that they're a good man, that they're a virtuous man, or at least striving to be virtuous, then you can choose to be friends with that person because you've kind of vetted them and recognized that, you know, this is someone I can trust. This is someone that's going to be loyal to me. This isn't someone that's going to burn me, that's going to backstab me, that's going to, you know, tear me down and bring me and be a bad influence on me.
Right. Think about what, and we've mentioned this before, the concept of building a band of brothers that Stephen Mansfield talks about in a couple of his books. You're not just going to let anyone in. There needs to be that vetting process, kind of like you mentioned, Brian. There needs to be some level of standards. And it's not because a band of brothers is necessarily any different than a group of friends. But realistically, I mean, this is something that we should be taking seriously. Friendship should be taken seriously. And if you're going to take friends seriously and have friends that are worthy of being appreciated, then you need to make sure you're choosing good friends. So the second, I think, kind of limit or guide to friendship is this idea that there should be complete harmony in all things after, or not after, without exception. And this is even if the aims of the friend are not entirely commendable and include things that are matters of life and death or reputation, or would not necessarily result in disgrace, which obviously people in Rome really cared about. And I think something that's important to point out in this is also that there are really two ways that Cicero mentions in which men are typically found to be disloyal and to basically break the bonds of friendship in. And this is when someone becomes successful and there's that tendency or that impulse to abandon your old friends or your old life or your old way of life or whatever. And then this other notion, which is kind of the opposite, that a man may abandon a friend who has fallen on hard times. And this is because, I don't know, maybe he could be annoying him because, you know, they're not doing all the things they could have been doing together, or there's so many factors into this that it's not really even worth listing. But that's not true friendship, and I think if you've listened to our previous episodes, you'd understand why immediately as well.
He has some points about different challenges to friendship and when it makes sense to break off a friendship, which is actually something that I'm planning for a future episode, so stay tuned for that. We'll be talking about that at some point down the line. But, you know, the point he's making here is that if you have a good friendship, you should cherish that friendship. You should hold to that friendship. You don't want to let the bonds of your friendship be broken. And it seems like what he's saying here can, in perhaps by appearances, look like he's contradicting his first rule of friendship, where he says, don't ask your friend to do anything dishonorable. Don't do anything dishonorable for your friend. And he says here, what does he say? Have complete harmony in all things without exception, even if it's not entirely commendable. And I think the point here is not so much that, you know, if your friend does something dishonorable or something that's bad or evil, that you go along with it. Certainly not. That's not what a good friend would do. But the point is that you don't just drop your friend because something like that happens. You know, you fight for your friendship. You fight for your friend's soul, the virtue in your friend. And perhaps you need to help your friend get through a hard time. You know, whether he's lost his job or he picked up an addiction or whatever it might be. A good friend sticks with his friend, you know, assuming that that person wants to, mend his ways. But at the very least, a good friend is going to try to help his friend to improve, if he has problems, to get through those times.
Let's move on to the foundations of friendship that Cicero outlines in his De Amicitia. I'll use the traditional Latin pronunciation. You can stick to the ecclesial and we'll really confuse our listeners. We don't have viewers yet. So one of the foundations that Cicero mentions is trust. And I think this makes sense. Romans had a very strong notion of loyalty. They were a very militaristic and jingoist society. And if you're going to have loyalty among, whether it's subordinates or whether it's even among friends, there needs to be trust. And this is another reason why you should vet your friends. You need to choose a man that's honest, that's forthright, that's sociable, that has similar interests to you. Because if you're not sharing the same aims as somebody, it becomes very difficult to make reliable and long-lasting friends. It's also, important to realize you can't really be friends with someone that's deceitful, because the entire notion, the entire foundation of your friendship could have just been a lie. They could have been using you for something. They could have, not come in with the same intentions as you. So you need to make sure that you're picking friends that are worthy. And in particular, you are picking friends and you are acting in a way and you're, kind of making sure they're acting in a way that is trustworthy and upright and really just, virtuous, I guess you could just say.
And the next point he makes is that, and you kind of touched on this, is those who do not share our aims will not make for reliable friends, which I think kind of goes against our cult of diversity and inclusivity or whatever you want to call it. But I think that this point is very true because, for example, if I am a Christian and I want to, serve the Lord and, someone is an atheist or maybe even a Satanist and they want to just do whatever they want, they don't care about, God, it's going to be hard to be good friends with them. And I would say it's going to be impossible to be good friends with them. And I think there's kind of this illusion that you can be good friends with people that are completely different from you. I don't think that is true. I think people can have friends that are different from you. They're just not this level of friendship. They're not the third type of friendship that Aristotle talks about. It's not a virtuous friendship. Maybe I can be friends with someone who is an atheist, but maybe they're an atheist who, you know, is trying to be virtuous, is trying to grow in prudence and fortitude and, all the other virtues. And, maybe we share a certain aim in that extent. But, I think the more conflicts in our aims, the more conflicts in our interests, the less likely you're going to be able to be a good friend with someone. Because just think about it. If you have, your best friends, the friends that you consider good friends are people that you want to be able to talk about anything with. And, let's just use politics, for example. Say someone likes Trump and the other person likes Biden. Are those two people going to be able to talk? Maybe. But I think if you just look at our society, probably not. Someone's going to get upset or offended or, they're not going to want to listen to the other person. And yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts on trying to be friends with someone that is quite different from you?
You tossed up a softball with that Trump Biden thing, and I'm really resisting making a joke, which would alienate maybe 5% of our viewers. Listeners. Because, Brian, it's impossible for these people to talk because Biden's voters are dead. That's a very interesting point. I think I'll be completely honest. My take on this notion of can you be friends with people that are completely different than you or people that have very strong differences, maybe not completely, but strong differences. A lot of this is kind of, I don't want to say pushed, but it's based on I'll say TV dramas or fiction or things like that, because, people will certainly push for, diversity in TV shows, and you'll end up with a cast of people that have nothing in common with each other, and they're, they'll try to make, let's say, a show about a high school or even like a workplace, and everybody's different, yet everyone gets along, and that's not necessarily the way it works in the real world. I mean, yes, you can be acquaintances and stuff. I think when it comes down to truly being friends, I think it is very difficult, because I guess the question that I would have is, why would these two people want to be strong friends? I mean, yes, you could be, like you mentioned before, kind of just acquaintances or friendships of pleasure, friendships of utility, like Aristotle talks about and classifies. But I don't think it's possible, because I just don't understand, and maybe this is a me issue, but I just don't understand why anyone would try to be friends with someone that is that completely different than them, unless they already had some underlying connection. I mean, it's really hard to consider, because I think a lot of my judgment is also just kind of based on superficial differences and not necessarily, when I think about examples, and not necessarily actual concrete differences. And I've certainly not necessarily experienced this either, so I can't really bring any personal experience to the table in this discussion.
Yeah, I suppose it's possible, but I think that, your point about superficial differences is that I think that's kind of the key there is, these friendships, supposed friendships between people who are completely different, I think they're usually pretty superficial. I had friends through sports, through rock climbing, things like that. And I guess I would call them my friends, but were they good, virtuous friends? People that I could talk to about anything? Absolutely not. And so, that's kind of the type of friends we're talking about. But why don't we move on to the next point? And this is, all these things kind of relate to trust as the foundation of friendship. And I guess the last point that he makes here about trust is that our friends should neither delight in making malicious charges against us, nor believe such charges when they are made by others. So, I guess the first point is pretty obvious. if you have a friend that's gossiping about you, or, you know, making things up about you, or, you know, attacking you, that person is not your friend. And I think the other point on the other side is that, and I feel like this is pretty lost today. Maybe not. I guess it's lost certainly in friendships that aren't good and virtuous. But, you know, if someone comes up to you and says something about your friend, you know, maybe this is another friend that you trust. You know, maybe these are two good friends and they say something. I think just by default, like he's saying here, you should not trust that person, at least in that, you know, what they're talking about. At the very least, you have to give your friend the benefit of the doubt and get his side of the story and talk to him and see what's going on there.
Social media has without a doubt made it difficult. I mean, even now, I think as we're still dealing with election month, I guess you could say, the amount of disinformation from really every corner of the internet is just staggering, and so much of it is personal. So imagine taking all of that you're probably seeing and distilling it down into just like a personal relationship that you may have with somebody, and not, you know, something political or something about whatever it may be, people that you don't know, public people. It's very, very dangerous to immediately assume that, you know, slander or lies or rumors are true. And that really, I think, says something about you if you believe that kind of without any belief or without any reason, I should say, because it shows that you don't necessarily have goodwill. It shows you don't have trust. And like you mentioned, Brian, there, all of these points kind of underlie the notion of trust and its importance in a friendship. So I think that's something that's very important to point out. And it's another reason to be very careful when you are on social media, because there's a good chance you run into this about something, about someone, and it could be someone you don't even know, but you still could be forming judgments on people. And, you know, if you're a Christian, you're taught not to judge, and that's a lot harder than it sounds, but it's something that should be practiced. And it's very important that when you see these things, I mean, you should try to avoid it, but when you do inevitably see slanderous things or rumors or what have you, make sure that you are still trying to play the skeptic and not taking something and, you know, even entertaining it without any valid reason.
This is certainly a challenge that we all face today, because, like you were saying, just look at the mob justice that you have out there. I think of like just people following the news, and when I was growing up, it was O.J. Simpson, and like everyone like had the certain side that they were on. And now you have like the Me Too movement, or, you know, where it's comes down to like people, if someone makes an accusation, people just automatically believe it. And okay, like if someone has an accusation, like you take that seriously, but that doesn't mean that you automatically believe it and that it's true. It especially if it's about your friend, like if it's about your friend, you have built up, you know, especially if you followed what what Cicero says, and you've chosen a good friend, you've vetted this person, you know that they're trustworthy. Why would you listen to someone who comes up to you and makes some serious charge against them? You know, maybe there is proof, maybe there's proof to it, but you don't just take that at face value. And I think that tends to be what people do today, is they just take things at face value and accept it. If someone makes a statement and asserts something, we just go along with it. And that's a very dangerous way to go about things. I don't know, maybe we should have an episode on that at some point, because I feel like that is rampant in our society.
Yeah, we'll stick it at the end, you know, in our, 3-4 months from now socket. Man, this is honestly a very good rabbit hole to get down. I know this is already going to be 2 episodes, considering we're 55 minutes in. So 55 minutes into recording, I'm sure this is minute 20 or 25 of the second episode. But anyway, excuse me. Let's wrap up with Cicero's foundations by stating something that should be obvious, which is actually quite difficult. And this is the notion that friends should be friendly with each other. And I think that's kind of weird to some people, because that sounds pretty obvious. It sounds like you're just defining something using the word. But I think what Cicero's trying to get at is that we need to make sure we're affable, we're pleasant, we're approachable, and we're graceful, meaning that we're courteous and polite in our manner and in our speech towards one another. And it's not that there isn't a time for seriousness and gravity. It's just the idea that actual friendship can really be distinguished by kind of a much lighter tone than, you know, this notion of kind of always being on the clock, always being serious, drive, 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 go, 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 because that is typically found much more in kind of like if you're a colleague, if you're in like a boss-subordinate relationship, you know, the friendships of utility that Aristotle talked about. So having this lighter air and having this kind of pleasantness really does, you know, give good reason to appreciate having good friends, because it really does, you know, as we mentioned in the beginning, kind of color your life. It makes the highs a lot higher and it helps makes the lows a little more bearable. So make sure that, you know, when you are picking friends and with your current friends, that you're trying to find men that you are able to, you know, kind of, you know, put your feet up, kick back a little bit and relax with, and not just be serious all the time.
It wouldn't be a Vital Masculinity episode if we didn't rip on social media and technology. So this is my soapbox right now. I'm going to rip on social media and technology. And by the way, I'm a software engineer, so I like technology. But I think the challenge here is that, you know, you think about people staring at their phones all the time, you know, the way that people talk on social media. And I feel like we're training ourselves to not be friendly, not be pleasant and approachable. People are very direct and serious, and, you know, they just state whatever comes into their mind and just throw it out there. And that's a shame. And that's, I just think about, you know, you see people walking down the street and they're just staring at their phones, or maybe you're out at a restaurant and they're staring at the phones. And, you know, I feel like we've gotten really good at learning how to ignore people. Like, oh, I don't feel like talking about someone, I'm just going to pull out my phone and stare at that because I don't want to be friendly right now. And, you know, part of being friendly is not just doing it when you feel like it, but actually, you know, doing it because it's the right thing to do. And I think that, you know, that's something that I need more practice in. And I'm sure that we all could probably practice more.
So let's kind of talk about with the last few minutes of this episode, or last probably 10-20 minutes of this episode, you know, where we should begin. And I think one of the best points to begin with is kind of a disclaimer that we've been talking a lot about getting friends, but I would reckon that many of you may already have a good friend or friends already. And when you're getting new friendships, that's a great thing to do. You know, I'm not saying that you should go out and get friends just for the sake of doing it, but getting new friendships, forming new friendships is a good thing, but you shouldn't prefer them over old friendships just because they're new. And a great example, a great metaphor is that friendship is just like, you know, wine. It grows a lot with age. And this is something that's very important, I think, to keep in mind as we look at the process of beginning, you know, on how we should, you know, choose friends or you know, some other advice, some snippets of advice that Cicero offers. Because a lot of the same advice can also be applied to our current friendships, because, you know, friendships take work. Any relationship's going to take work. May not be as much work as, say, a romantic relationship where you're living with the person, but it is going to take work and it is going to require a bit of effort, and making sure that you are a good friend to this other person as well as trying to find someone that is a good friend to you. So that's something just to keep in mind as we get into this. Would you like to kick us off, Brian?
These next points are kind of a recap, so we're probably not going to spend a whole lot of time on them, but I guess we'll see what happens. But the first point he makes is that by nature, every person is dear to himself on his own account. And this is how we should treat how we should love our friends. And I think what he means here is that, you know, I love myself because it's myself. You know, When I'm hungry, I feed myself. When I'm tired, I go to bed. You know, I serve myself very well, sometimes too well. And, you know, that's kind of how we should love our friends, is that we should, you know, look at, okay, is my friend hungry? Maybe I'll see if he wants something to eat. Maybe he's thirsty. I'll get him something to drink. Is he tired? Maybe we should call it a night and head home. You know, so it's looking out for the other person as you would look out for yourself. And that requires a certain level of intimacy and understanding of, you know, who this person is, what their desires are, and really talking to them and getting to know them and being aware of, you know, how they're feeling and what they're up to, so that you can serve them as you would yourself.
Another good point that's important to keep in mind is that we shouldn't expect our friends to be the type of people we can't be. And this is basically saying that we should not hold our friends to different standards than we hold ourselves. I think it's kind of a temptation. Whoops, that was a noise. Hold on a second. I think there's kind of a temptation to, you know, find people that are going to inspire, motivate us to just, you know, become better people. And whether it's something as simple, maybe not simple, but something like becoming stronger, or, you know, something like becoming a much more virtuous person, that can help. But I think the better aspect is to make sure you're still keeping the burden of responsibility for your own life on yourself. Don't put it on someone else. Don't put it on a relationship with somebody else. First, become a good person, and then seek out someone good. And by doing that, you'll honestly also make sure that you're able to find someone that is truly good, not someone that's either deceptively good or someone that's going to lead you down the wrong path.
And while we're on the note of being a good person first, being a virtuous man first, one of the main things that we should be looking to is learning how to control our passions. And what that really means is just growing in virtue, being prudent, just, temperate, and having fortitude. If you're able to be disciplined, to master yourself, to think clearly, to be able to, you know, to act justly towards other people, you're going to be able to be a good friend, and you know, people are going to appreciate that, and it'll help you find good friends too, because you'll know what to look for.
And another point, which goes without saying, and we've mentioned it before, is the whole notion that you need to choose your friends carefully. I don't think we need to spend too much more time on that. So the next one is this idea that good friends will stand by each other, but not ask anything dishonorable of each other. And we've mentioned this before as well. It's important to have this sense of trust and loyalty, and also make sure that you're not, you know, going back to the mafia example from the last episode, I guess I should say, you know, making sure that you're doing something that's going to make someone an unvirtuous person, that is going to put them in harm's way, whatever it may be. You want to make sure you're always looking out for their best interests like they were your own.
When you're talking about good friends standing by one another, I think the reason they do that is because good friends love, cherish, and respect one another. And when you have that love, when you respect your friend, you know, you're going to want to stand by them, and that's certainly an important thing to do.
The next point's a very hard one, because no one really likes receiving criticism, but it's the idea that good friends can give and receive admonishments and reprimands from each other. And I would add and say that, you know, without complaint, without protest, basically, the truth can hurt, guys. But we don't want to be picking people that are flatterers. We don't want to make people or make friends with people that are going to just say what we want to hear, because it's not going to be good for us and it's not going to be good for them. And it really is creating a relationship based on deceit and lies. If I were to tell my wife exactly what she wanted to hear, she wouldn't become, I guess, how much?
Yeah, be careful.
Maybe that's not the best example. Yeah, I know. Hey, I know she's listening. I know my mother-in-law's listening. I mean, heck, my wife's listening from the room next door. But I'll just use you, Brian. Like, you know, if you were like, you know, I don't need to work out anymore, yada, 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 you know, and then you're complaining about how, like, you know, you're all these things are going wrong and, you know, you're miserable and you're gaining weight and all these things. Well, it would be right for me to bring it up, because if I was just like, oh, you're doing great, man, you know, keep going doing what you're doing, you're fine, you can get it tomorrow. Why, what good would that do you? I would be basically making you feel good and doing it for purposes for me, making me feel good would be the ulterior motive. I would make you feel good for what, you know, 45 seconds, a minute at most. And then tomorrow or later that day, you'd have the same exact feelings. So it's very important that we make sure that we're being careful and we're being honest, but we're also being tactful. We need to make sure that all of these things kind of blend together and we find that Aristotelian mean. We're not going out there and basically punching them in the face with the truth, and we're not hiding it from them. We need to make sure we're telling the truth with love, which is a great quote by Father Thomas Hopko. So that's something I think is very important, and it is one of the most difficult things to give as well as receive.
The one point that he makes is that advice should be firm but not harsh. You know, you're not... I think of like a football coach or like, you know, the guy that's screaming, the drill sergeant. You know, maybe you get some results from that, but do you want to be friends with that guy afterwards? Probably not. So I don't know. I guess it depends on what type of friend you have. But generally, you know, you're being firm. You're not, you know, being a jerk to the guy. And I guess the other point to recognize here is that an admonishment is not a scolding. Like, you're not your friend's dad. You're not your friend's, you know, you're friends because you have some equality in your relationship. Although I guess we'll talk about unequal friendships later. But, you know, there's this level of equality in your relationship. You know, you have similar virtues. You have similar goals and outlooks that you're and interests that you have. So you're kind of on the same level. So to talk to your friend like you're their dad or you're a teacher or something like that, it's probably not going to come across very well. On the flip side, he talks about how some men are too sensitive to bear even gentle counsel from their friends. And he follows this up by saying, there is little hope for them.
I agree. Yeah, you know, I like that saying. And that may rub people the wrong way. We need to be strong. We need to be able to bear our own burdens. There are men out there. There are people out there that don't want to bear the hardships of life. And this is why they look for people that are flatterers. And this is why Cicero points out in his next point, there are people that are too easily or readily or even willingly, they'll fall into flattery, or they'll fall for flattery, I should say, because they just want to be told what they want to hear. If you can't bear even gentle critique from friends, then I think you need to worry about you have bigger things to worry about in life, I guess. You know, you need to work on your courage. You need to work on your prudence. You need to work on, you know, even your temperance, I would say, because you're drinking too much, just flattery. You're just, that is the only thing you're basically consuming, things you want to hear. So that's something I think that's very important. And I mean, it goes without saying, which is why I've been spending so much time on this particular point. It's very, very, very important to be able to find people that are able to both give and receive, you know, criticism, admonishment, whatever it may be. Because otherwise, you know, even that the whole issue of trust can come into question, because you could really start questioning, you know, whether they actually have your best intentions out for you, if they're lying to you, or if they're not willing to, you know, listen to, you know, your honest feedback for them.
Exactly. If you can't trust your friend who's, you know, maybe he's trying to help you, he's giving you some criticism. If you can't trust that he's looking out for you, he wants the best for you, then maybe he's not a good friend, or maybe you're not a good friend. That's probably more likely. Yeah, I think that's a great point. And Cicero kind of wraps this up by saying that we should always be on the lookout for men of virtue who would make good friends. And then he has the main character, Laelius, conclude by saying, This is all that I had to say about friendship, but I exhort you both so to esteem virtue, without which friendship cannot exist, that accepting virtue, you will think nothing more excellent than friendship.
I think it's a very fitting way to end this episode, because everything really comes back to virtue. Friendship, as we've mentioned in the beginning of the series, really, really needs to tie into our notion of virtue, our notion of excellence, our notion of the good, the true, and the beautiful. Because otherwise, there's a tendency to degenerate, or really there's just no tendency towards actual friendship at all. And I think one of the main takeaways from this, as I mentioned, kind of prefacing everything that we've talked about in this episode, is the notion that all of these things you should be grateful for. You know, all of these things are good and really spice up life. They make life worth living. They make life much more pleasurable, as we mentioned in the beginning. It's a very good thing, and it's something you should appreciate to be able to, you know, have friends that are going to give you feedback. It's a good thing and something you should appreciate to have friends that are going to love and cherish and respect you. And it's a good thing to have these friends that are going to basically demand it from you as well, and to kind of hold you accountable to that. And we have a lot more to talk about in future episodes, probably on the same vein. But I would say probably one of the best things you can do right now is just to reflect on your current friendships, or even your previous friendships from maybe when you were younger, and kind of view what they were like in comparison to what Cicero talks about. And really also, I would say, what Aristotle and C.S. Lewis talked about based on our last couple of episodes. Now, Brian, do you have any closing thoughts or arguments?
No, I don't think so. I was just going to say that sounds like our daily deed.
I know. I didn't even think about doing one. We've not really done an official one in a long, long time, but I think that is a great thing to do. So maybe we'll add that to the show notes. And speaking of show notes, I just want to point out that you can find all of our links to our sources, including De Amicitia by Cicero, a place to buy that or read that. That's all below in the show notes. You'll find links to our website where you can read our journal. You can sign up for our newsletter. The other thing I will suggest is that you please, please, please leave us a rating and review. It really helps, guys. And we've been doing great. I can't believe that we've already beaten our yearly goal. And as of today, we still have a month and a half left. And I think we may beat it by about 20%. Our yearly goal, or 16-20%, whatever it may be. We're on a very good pace, and it's really just inspiring to see the support and the feedback we've gotten. So thank you so much. Leave us your honest rating and review wherever you're listening, because it really does help, and it really helps, you know, other men to find this. And this is something, especially in our very polarized world, we could probably all use a little more friendship. So with all that being said, I wanted to thank you again for listening, and I wanted to remind you, as always, that you should remember that virtue makes the man. Have a good one, gents.